On these territories, and what a great honor to be with you tonight. There has never been a time in our history when First Nations children needed you more. And the good news is there's never been a time in our history when there's been more that you can do. We have in front of us the moment when we can turn the page on Canada's history between First Nations children and the government of Canada from one of pain, one of oppression, one of separation, and one of apology, to one of hope, to one of inspiration, to one of possibility. And as we turn that page, we also breathe life into a song that we sing so often but don't know what it means. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. What is Canada? What does it stand? Who are we, and how do we stand on guard? Is it just at those moments of the hockey game? Is it just on November 11th when we pay honor to the veterans who have gone to fight off in the wars, who fought for the values of freedom, of equality, of justice? Or is it that we recognize that at times of peace, we will often give away the very values that we honor our veterans for having fought for with other countries? Our common history is that the Canadian government has been responsible for the biggest human rights violations of our time. The internment of Japanese persons during the Second World War, the Chinese head tax, the turning back of Jewish persons to face the horrors of the Holocaust, the residential schools. And right now before you, the government of Canada is fighting for the right to give First Nations children less opportunity than all other Canadians enjoy. And all of this has been made possible because some of us struggle to stand on guard for our country when it is our own government that is going adrift. There is a report. It has a line that says, can anyone hazard a guess as to what year or what century real equality for First Nations children will be achieved? That was written on First Nations education in 1967. I was 3 years old. Canada builds two bridges for its children. There's a non-Aboriginal bridge, and it goes over a very fast, deep-running river. And that is not as strong as a wealthy nation like ours can make it. But thankfully, to the resilience of the children and their families, most of the kids make it over to the other side to become adults and live out the lives of their dreams, being proud and fully part of who they are. And then there's the bridge for First Nations children. Now, the Government of Canada, provincial child welfare and education and health laws have displaced traditional First Nations laws on reserve. So they apply on reserve, but the federal government is supposed to fund it. And as Sheila Fraser will tell you, and many other auditor generals before, they fund them at a far lesser level than all other Canadians enjoy. So the bridge only goes about two-thirds over the river. And as First Nations youth are dropping into the rates of high dropout rates, high incarceration rates, high suicide rates, high child welfare placements, and First Nations children, young people, community members, experts like Sheila Fraser and our non-Aboriginal allies are screaming at the government, saying, please finish the rest of the bridge. They look back at us and they say, why aren't you thankful for the three quarters of a bridge we built for you? And when that does not work, they raise questions about our financial management. And I think you'll forgive me for this, but if financial mismanagement was a racial characteristic, No white man in their 40s or 50s should ever head up a Fortune 500 company after 2008, right? Now, these inequalities have gone on for years. The government of Canada knows these inequalities. They know the harms it's creating for children, not yesterday's children, the children of today, and what it'll mean for them and as they grow up into adulthood and raise their own families. They have spent billions of dollars on things like hosting gatherings for the G8. And as we know recently, it is only viewed as an accounting error to misplace $10 billion when it comes to underestimating the cost of fighter jets. But they only had $275 million to invest in the hopes and dreams of First Nations children who are so learning in devastating conditions in many schools across the country. I think part of this has been made possible because caring Canadians have not had the opportunity to know what this means for kids. They simply don't know the information. And so I want to introduce you to Shannon Kustach. She is one of my heroes. And she was going to kindergarten when in grade in 2000. She was a kid who was so excited to go to school. She just waited for that day. She had all her brand new school supplies. Her brothers and sisters had gone before her, and now it was her turn. But the only school in her community was closed because it sat atop a toxic waste dump of over 30,000 gallons of diesel fuel. 30,000 gallons of diesel fuel. The government of Canada had placed a heating pipe under the school, and because of frost heaving, the pipe had leaked. And over a period of 20 years, the children, the staff, the community members were all reporting that they were becoming nauseous. They were getting headaches. They were getting rashes. But nothing was done until finally this community managed enough money to get an environmental assessment, and it was classed as a Class 1 toxic waste dump. So toxic were the books and pencils in the school that even those small things had to be left behind in the classroom. So the government of Canada in 2000, when this beautiful girl was 5 years old, brought up portable trailers and put them on the playground of the contaminated school, only a stone's throw away from the contaminated site, entered Shannon Kustach into the portable trailer that she was going to learn her first lessons of public school. Now, she didn't dream of growing up to be an activist. She just wanted to be a kid, and she loved to learn. But one thing that was really surprising to her is that she was raised in her Cree traditions and in her language, and that she was taught that when leaders make a promise, that they have to keep it. And the government of Canada made the children of Attawapiskat 3 promises for a new school across 2 political parties, and they failed to deliver. By the time Shannon was in grade 8, these portable trailers, which were only meant to be there for months, not years, had deteriorated to such horrible conditions that the heat would often go off in 50 below zero temperatures. The children would have to bring their snacks to their desks to guard them against the infestation of the rats. Black mold was growing in some of the trailers. There was no library. There is no science lab. There is no adequate funding for teachers. And this applies to every First Nations school, even if it looks like a good one to one of the ones you would drive by. They're underfunded by $2,000 to $3,000 less per student per year than all other Canadians enjoy. So what did she do? CBC had actually come up and did a documentary called The Forgotten Children of Attawapiskat. And the children started calling themselves that. But Shannon and her friends, they didn't believe it in their hearts. They had spent their lives writing letters to the politicians in Ottawa. They thought that if they understood how hard it is to learn in those conditions, that they would do something. But those letters went unanswered. And so Shannon gets on one of the few computers in her community, and she makes a YouTube video. And she invites non-Aboriginal children and young people from all over the country to send letters to the Prime Minister to say that every kid deserves a school. She sent it out into the world, and she wondered if anyone would write back. And in Toronto, a little girl heard her call. Her name is Clara. She gets out her best stationery. And she writes a letter. She says, "Dear Prime Minister, These are all the things I did in school today, and I don't know why First Nations children don't get the same chance to do it. Why is that? And sends it off. It wasn't too long later that the Prime Minister writes back, and a letter larger than what she expected arrives in the mail. And she opens it up, and inside is a 4x6 autograph photo of our Prime Minister. Along with a note saying how he likes to listen to hear from young people. Well, she wasn't too impressed. And so she takes the picture to her classmates at the school. She tells them the story about Shannon and her friends. And she tells them, and she shows them the photograph. And so the kids all together decided that they had to write a letter to the Prime Minister and say, you didn't answer Clara's question. And not only didn't you answer your question, we're going to talk to our moms and dads and other students about this, and eventually you're going to have to do the right thing. And a movement began. The largest child-led letter-writing campaign in Canadian history was born in that moment. Halfway through Shannon's grade 8 year, she was a girl with many hats, and she was also on the graduation team. And they had raised enough money to go down to Niagara Falls as a grade 8 graduating class to celebrate that big moment for themselves, a particularly special moment given the hardship that they had endured. But a special letter arrived from Ottawa. It was from the government, and they said, there's no funding for school for you. So these 13-year-olds went into a room, and they met up by themselves, and they said, what do we do about this? And they all agreed that they would cancel their grade 8 graduation, and they would use the money to send Shannon Kustachin and two young men down to meet with the Minister of Indian Affairs instead. In 2008 in June, Shannon Kustachin was standing at the door of Minister Chuck Strong. And in a Globe and Mail quote of the week, she would later say, I think the minister was nervous. And I think this is an important message for everybody who thinks about political advocacy. I think governments know what to do when adults come knocking at their door. They certainly know what to do when political parties come knocking at their door. But I think, like many of us, we're always baffled by a 13-year-old. And in she walks with all her grace. And the first thing the minister says to her is he points out how big his office is, she says. And she said, yes, it is really nice, and I wish it was this nice for us who are trying to learn up in Attawapiskat. And then the minister starts looking at his watch, because ministers have important things to do. And so she cuts to the chase and she says, are you going to give us a school or not? And he said, no, I can't afford it. We can't afford it. And grace beyond her years, she stands up. She looks at the minister straight in the eye. She puts out her hand. She says, thank you very much for meeting with me today, minister. But I don't believe you. And I will never give up, because school's a time for dreams and every kid deserves this. This is her 2 hours later in front of Parliament. So nervous, she didn't know what she was going to say to the world. Those of us who were standing next to her could even hear her paper shaking as she was standing there, and she would tell the country what she had told the minister. That she will never give up, because school's a time for dreams and every kid deserves this. Just a couple months later, Shannon Kustachin graduated from grade 8. It was her dream to come to Carleton University in Ottawa to become a lawyer, because she had learned by that point that there were First Nations kids all over the country suffering just like she was. Children in Manitoba going to schools infested with snakes. Kids in BC going to schools infested with black mold. No matter even if you had a good school, you didn't have enough money for teachers and papers and pens. She knew it was about more than her, and she wanted to do the right thing. But she had a difficult choice to make. This high school in her own community was so underfunded, there was no hope that she could graduate at the same level required to get into law school. So she would have to travel hundreds of miles away from her loving family to simply get an education. And at the age of 13 years, Shannon Kustachin, for the first time in her life, stood in a hallway of a school. And she was walking down the hallway to talk to other students. And she was with Charlie Angus, the Member of Parliament, and soon Charlie found himself walking on his own. He didn't know where Shannon was. He backtracks through all the rooms and he finds her in a classroom. It was a rundown school, not one of the ones that you might think would be the glossy ones that you'd see here in Vancouver. And she was picking up all the books, and she was looking up all the papers and just touching things. And there were tears running down her cheeks. And when Charlie said, "What's wrong, Shannon?" she said, "I wish I had my light to live over again so I could go to a school as nice as this." It was only a few months later that Shannon Kustachin died in a car accident.